Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I discuss the Nyx and Hades star systems. Hello, citizen. Welcome to episode 27 of Star Citizens United. I'm Lex Starwalker. Thanks so much for flying with me today. I've got a great show for you. I'm continuing my series of lore episodes. I'm going to talk about a couple star systems today, Hades and Nyx. These are both pretty interesting systems with some interesting things going on for you, depending on what your focus is going to be in the game. Again, I want to remind you that you can now listen to this show on the base. So go check out the base at radio.starcitizenbase.com and check us out. I'm going to start out today talking about the Nyx star system. This is coming from the Galactic Guide to Nyx on the Robert Space Industries website. I will have a link directly to this article in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/StarCitizensUnited if you'd like to follow along. Nyx was discovered in 2582 during the height of the newly formed United Empire of Earth's territorial expansion. The system consists of three unremarkable planets circling an F-type main sequence star. Astronomically, the most distinct aspect of Nyx is that it is located directly on the border of a dark nebula, which enshrouds the orbits of all three worlds. The nebula's gases severely hamper visibility and significantly limit scanner use, something the star system's few inhabitants rely on. The system was first charted through a jump point in the Stanton system by a solo nav jumper, Carla Larry. Carla's official claim doesn't specify much of interest in the system, writing that it, quote, lacks significant mineral deposits or logical reason to apply the expense of terraformation. Larry did make an attempt to formally name the star's three worlds, Lou, Morgan, and Ashley, apparently after three separate romantic conquests she was pursuing. As per normal policy, the UEE government has never recognized these names, and they have never been widely used. Whether the system's intrepid discoverer was able to impress any of their namesakes is lost to history. In the last two centuries, Nyx has gained some additional utility as a waypoint on the Castor-Stanton run, with a significant credit value of cargo moving through the system at any one time. Small-scale piracy is not uncommon, buoyed by the system's nebula, and travelers are warned not to veer off the standard space lanes during transit of the system. The first planet in the Nyx system is a coreless, heat-swept world that was long ago picked clean of valuable minerals. Soon after the system was discovered, a routine survey revealed the presence of high-grade metals beneath the planet's surface. Once word got out, the planet briefly became the focus of a military-backed mining contract with Golden Horizon, and within 50 years, the planet was completely stripped of its resources and its material wealth shipped off to Killian to help supply the Empire's growing war efforts. By 2630, Nyx 1 had been rendered permanently useless and little evidence of human habitation remained. A smoggy, desolate world, Nyx 2, was once considered an edge case for terraforming. Thick clouds of acid and carbon dioxide surround the world, and the planet is technically teetering at the inner edge of the system's green band. Nevertheless, a serious study was conducted as to whether or not it could be made inhabitable. The end result was that it could, but it would take generations of effort and provide little reward beyond the creation of a base particularly well hidden by nebula gases. EVA on the planet itself is lethal. Even if explorers are protected from the corrosive elements, they will be unable to function in the high-pressure atmosphere. A dense asteroid belt circles Nix's star at roughly 8 AU out. The asteroid field is not a source of valuable minerals, but coupled with the nebula, it has created a very good place to hide. An unknown number of small settlements have been established on asteroids in the area, all of which must import survival goods from outside the system. These small, uncharted asteroid bases are home to a variety of fringe colonists seeking anything from life outside the UEE to a platform from which to operate outside the law. Pirate raids in the system, typically conducted against the Trans-Stanton shipping, are believed to operate out of larger bases in the field. The highlight of these settlements is Delamar, the largest of the asteroids. The size of a planetoid, Delamar is hidden deep in the Nix belt. The settlement was formed by free thinkers during the oppressive Messer era and remains a hotbed for political radicals and anti-UEE sentiment to this day. As the place to hide reputation of the Nix system has expanded, an increasing number of criminals have moved in, the result being an ongoing conflict between small criminal groups and political radicals who feel that outright illegal activities undermine their message. Delamar can be visited by anyone passing through the system, although there is a strong sense of paranoia. Everyone involved in running the station seems perpetually afraid of a massive police raid, which they believe is constantly moments away from happening. The truth is that the Moonlet is so well hidden and so difficult to reach that the UEE has never seriously considered dispatching forces to eliminate it. Another likely factor of this is the fact that the dissidents remaining are fairly toothless, generally coming off in the media as protesting the government simply for the sake of protesting. Nix 3, the final planet in the Nix system, is located far from the sun's light and is an ice giant. Nix 3 is a massive ball of frozen water and ammonia vapor, and is neither a candidate for terraformation nor one that contains any minerals or other resources worth extracting. The planet has no breathable atmosphere. While a ship with an onboard life support could itself survive for a time on the surface, there is little reason to attempt such a feat. EVA would be impossible, and external ship repair would likely be easier in a vacuum. So there you go, there's the Nix system. Not a whole lot going on there other than in the asteroid belt, but if you're one of those unscrupulous types, might be a place to check out. All right, next I want to talk about the Hades system. This is coming from the Galactic Guide to the Hades system on the website. You can find a link directly to this article in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. So we start out with a quote here from Eli Thorne, a nav jumper. I had put my ship on automatic, bearing for Hades 3, and then climbed down to the middeck. As I stepped toward the hold, I caught sight of something in the darkness. I couldn't say it was even human, but humanoid at least. I had an immediate impression of a body with exposed musculature, covered in blue-hued veins. It turned to look right at me when my ship suddenly rocked, and it was gone. It was just a nanosecond of an encounter, but I was left with a terrible sense of presence. It was as though I'd seen something my mind couldn't understand. The feeling never passed. I sold the ship when I got home. It didn't feel like mine anymore. Ooh, spooky. Hades is a lawless system that is technically classified as abandoned by UEE stellar cartography. A blue-white B94 star, Hades produces too little heat for a viable green band. While several planets survive in orbit, none has the heat to support life. In broad stellar terms, and in seeming contradiction to the age of other stars in the stellar neighborhood, Hades seems to be nearing the end of its life cycle. Hades was first identified in 2515 by the Mary Crow, a tramp freighter. The discovery was not formally cataloged because the ship was carrying several hundred freight units of stolen fusion drives. 19 years later, Jake Tapps, the Crow's navigator and sole surviving crew member, found himself penniless and planet-bound. He sold the ship's extensive logbooks to finance a slam habit, and the Haiti system was subsequently charted and officially registered by the Dynamo Corporation. Interest in the system skyrocketed once Dynamo's exploration ships conducted their initial survey. While the system was deemed still totally inappropriate for terraforming, they located significant evidence that all of the worlds were once home to an extinct spacefaring society. Decades of research have created an interesting picture of an advanced society that ultimately wiped itself out through internecine conflict. The majority of the surfaces of Haiti's three inner planets are pockmarked with impact craters, while the final former planet in the system has literally been split in half through as-of-yet unidentified means. It was this grandiose level of destruction that gave the system its name. While there are no facilities for refueling or ship maintenance in the Haiti system, it is still part of an active space lane. However, very few alter their courses to explore the inner system. Most of those who are willing to traverse onto the planets are xenoarchaeologists and tomb raiders. Despite the widespread devastation, thousands of structures have been identified on Haiti's graveyard worlds, and many more are believed to exist underground. Countless artifacts are taken or stolen from these sites each year, and it is believed that there are a number of ongoing formal outlaw operations running to try to locate some of the technology that the Hadesians used to destroy themselves. The first planet in the system completely lacks any atmosphere. Scattered unnatural craters and ruins indicate that the Hadesians must have colonized Hades I in a limited capacity. Scientists have been unable to figure out whether it was always this way or whether the atmosphere was another victim of the war. Hades II retains something of an atmosphere, but it is a violent one. Environmental suits must be worn, and due to the amount of volcanic ash in what remains of the atmosphere, no one should ever be away from a breather. Sprawling Hadesian cities spider across the landscape, every single one of them dead and withering away in the unrelenting wind. The unstable nature of the ruins makes this surface a very precarious one to try to explore. Deposits of carium, a mineral prized by the Xi'an for use in their armor plating, have been discovered on Hades II. Although, due to the archaeological value of the system, no corporate mining campaign has ever been authorized. On the surface, Hades III matches Hades I and Hades II. It is a gruesome landscape of impact craters and shattered cities. The atmosphere is toxic, and only the best-equipped xenoarchaeology teams should make landfall. Despite this, countless ruins have been documented over the years, perpetuating the belief in certain circles that there is still much remaining to discover in Hades. Death and destruction is not limited to the surface of Hades III. At a Lagrange point high above the planet, a more recent graveyard sits in orbit. Back in 2901, a Xi'an junker, smuggling a cargo of Asoyans bound for slaughter and rendering, suffered engine troubles. As the crew struggled to restore power to the ship, the captive Asoyans, normally docile creatures, escaped and proceeded to slaughter the crew of a rescue ship, and ultimately, each other. Hades IV is commonly considered a half-planet, leading to the somewhat confusing 3.5 worlds designation in the formal UEE listing. While the entire planet still exists and has not degenerated into a complete asteroid field, it does so in two distinct halves. It's impossible to wholly comprehend the absolute horror of a weapon capable of destroying an entire planet, but it is difficult not to marvel at the spectacle of this desolation. Unless, of course, you've seen Star Wars, which, who hasn't? There are as many theories about the Hadesians' nature as there are stars in the sky. Every year, a fresh batch of university graduates descends on the system, hoping that they will be the ones to finally crack the mystery of this civilization. And every year, they go away in frustration. That doesn't mean that the Hadesian are a complete mystery. Scientists have managed to roughly determine their physical dimensions and that their civil war was fought roughly 300,000 years ago. based on skeletal and architectural evidence, Hadesians were roundish creatures with a bulky central body, multiple thin appendages, a number that apparently varied from Hadesian to Hadesian, and a pair of long arms complete the figure. So there you go. There's the Hades system. This sounds like a really interesting place, and this sounds like a cool system for the explorer types out there to visit. I've wondered before on the show whether there is going to be any possibility for any kind of archaeological or anthropological career path, or if not, at least things of that nature that you can do and explore in the game. And articles like this make me wonder and make me hopeful that will be a thing that we can do. And if so, the Hades system would definitely be a cool place to check out. That's going to wrap up episode 27 of Star Citizens United. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. Please follow me on Google Plus. Just search for Lex Starwalker. And please follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Check out my website, starwalkerstudios.com. There you can find the show notes for this show. You can also find my other podcasts there. And check me out on the base, radio.starcitizenbase.com. Very cool to join all the fine Star Citizen programming on the base. Awesome stuff. I want to send a special shout out and thank you to J.S. King for your 5-star review on iTunes. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And again, if you enjoy the show, a great way that you can help me out and help me reach more listeners is to head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts and leave me a review. I would really appreciate it. If you go to the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/StarCitizensUnited and go into any of the episodes, you will find buttons that will take you directly to the show on iTunes or Stitcher at the top of the show notes. And again, thank you, J.S. King, for your review. I really appreciate it. I want to thank you all so much for strapping in and flying with me on yet another episode of Star Citizens United. Until next time, I'll see you out there. This has been a Star Walker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Star Walker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com. Thank you.